You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS Radio Waterloo, 102.7, 946 on the Rogers Digital Network.
Good morning, Waterloo Region. It is January 20, 2020. Today is Martin Luther King Day, although there's not many celebrations here in Waterloo Region, but our guest Tamara Lawrence will tell us of some celebrations, as well as talking about anti-war rallies and how the military influences the climate crisis. First, we're going to be listening to Astronomical Wonders by The Soviet Influence.
As the moon crashes into earth.
the Soviet influence. Track called Astronomical Wonders from their Boundaries album from back in 2013. We have in the studio Tamara Lawrence. Welcome, Tamara.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Today is Martin Luther King Day, Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes, it is. It's a national holiday in the United States, and people around the world are marking the day to keep alive his life and legacy.
Yes. Big advocate for peace and nonviolence, two things that are close to my social justice activities. WR Nonviolence used to put on an event every year for Martin Luther King Day, but hasn't been doing so in a while. However, you've stepped up to the plate.
Yes, I am organizing a film screening tonight at the Balsillie School of International Affairs at their location at 67 Herb Street. It's a screening of the film A Call to Conscience. It's about Dr. King's most important but least known speech called Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break the Silence. And it's also a film about the last year of Dr. King's life. And it's a really important film. And I have made the commitment to screen it in Dr. King's honor every year to keep alive his message of peace and social justice and nonviolence. And I encourage people to come out. It's at 7 o'clock at the Balsillie School, and it's free, and it's a great way to mark the day.
Balsillie School is at the corner of Caroline and Herb Street in Waterloo.
That's right. Yeah.
I've heard the speech. It was aired on, I think, an NPR station at one point. You know, listening to public radio, I came across that. Very moving, very powerful, and still very relevant today.
It is absolutely very relevant. And it's a speech that often Democracy Now! Will air, another great radio public broadcaster will air on Dr. King's Day. And I encourage people to look up that speech online, Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break the Silence. And many Dr. King scholars say it was the speech that got him assassinated. He was killed in Memphis 1 year later to the day that he gave that speech at the Riverside Church in New York. He was killed on April 4th, 1968 in Memphis. He was there to support the garbage workers. And in the speech that he gave the year before, in the speech Beyond Vietnam, this is the speech where Dr. King made the links between racism, the poverty that he saw in the United States, and militarism, and the U.S. war in Vietnam. And he made those links, and he called them the three evil triplets. And he said in that speech that the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, at that time, was the United States. And that was a very incisive, a very critical and sharp indictment of U.S. foreign policy. Mm-hmm. But his indictment in 1967 could be used today. I mean, the United States continues to be involved in endless wars. And so his message against militarism and its links to poverty and to racism are still so timely and relevant today. And I encourage people to read the film, and I also encourage people to come out and watch the film tonight.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just the U.S. that's involved in these racist wars. Canada is just as complicit.
Absolutely. Canada is aiding and abetting the U.S. Military all over the world. So right now, for instance, there are many U.S. troops in the Middle East. Of course, the United States is provoking a war with Iran. Canada was involved with the United States in a 12-year illegal war in Afghanistan from 2002 to 2014. Canada has been involved with the United States bombing Syria and Iraq from 2014 to 2019. Canada was involved with the United States in bombing Libya in 2011, which totally destabilized North Africa. And Canada is leading battle groups right now, along with the United States, in Ukraine, Poland, and Latvia, with the United States right along Russia's borders. So Canada is very much involved with U.S. militarism. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I want to screen this film, is to get Canadians to think more critically about our own role in this militarism and our involvement in endless U.S. wars.
Mm-hmm. and not just involvement in wars, but also Canada is also interfering with democratic processes in Venezuela, Bolivia, places where they haven't been invited.
Yes, absolutely. So Canada, a year ago, started to orchestrate with the United States and the Lima Group about a dozen right-wing countries in Central and South America, mm-hmm. orchestrating a coup against Venezuela, against the Maduro government. And so the United States and Canada have not supported the Maduro and previously the Chavez government, mm-hmm. these socialist governments in Venezuela, primarily because they nationalized their oil and mineral natural resources and kept the United States and Canadian companies out. And we know it was very clear statements that Bolton made and Pompeo made, members of the Trump administration, mm-hmm. said that they want control of Venezuelan oil. I mean, Venezuela has one of the largest, mm-hmm. one of the proven reserves of oil in the world. And so Canada has been working with the United States and the Lima Group trying to overthrow the government of Maduro in Venezuela, but they haven't succeeded. It's been a year, and Maduro has stayed in place, and he has because he's got majority support of the people of Venezuela. The people know that the United States has tried repeatedly over the past 50 years to try to overthrow their governments, have been involved in illegal interference in their country, and so the people of Venezuela, they're extremely well informed about foreign interference in their country, and they want Canada and they want the United States out. They want our countries to respect international law, mm-hmm. and their sovereignty and self-determination and not interfere in their country.
Canada is a really bad actor when it comes to self-determination for Indigenous peoples. Look at our own Indigenous population out in BC at the moment. They have the Wet'suwet'en there have rights to that land. It's unceded territory. It does not belong to Canada. It's a colonialist invasion there. And yet Canada is sending in the RCMP to literally bulldoze their way through the forest to build a pipeline.
Absolutely. This is extractive imperialism domestically, mm-hmm. and internationally. And there's a link between state violence that Canada has inflicted against our own Indigenous people here, either through the RCMP or with the Canadian military, and the state violence that we see by Canada's armed forces overseas. And Canadians should know that the largest deployment domestically of Canadian troops ever was against Indigenous people with the Oka crisis. And so we need to be very concerned about state violence, you know, mm-hmm. against our Indigenous people here and against people overseas.
You're particularly well informed in all this. What brings you to this level of knowledge?
Well, I am very concerned about Canada's role in the world, and I have traveled extensively, and I've heard from people who have, you know, suffered from our foreign policy, and I have stood in solidarity with people who have objected to what our government, mm-hmm. what the Canadian government is doing. And so, you know, I follow very closely the news. I follow very closely what the Canadian Armed Forces is doing internationally. And I also listen to Indigenous critical voices, mm-hmm. of people who are bearing the brunt of our foreign policy. So,
Council of Canadians has just recommended Arthur Manuel's book, Unsettling Canada, which I'm almost finished. I've been reading this for nigh on 6-8 months now. Got interrupted by an election, so didn't provide due diligence in my reading. Arthur Manuel details in his book all the transgressions that Canada as a colonialist state has made against Indigenous people. So you're absolutely right. You know, Canada is complicit domestically, internationally, in the lack of self-determination, in the disruption of self-determination for people.
And I would also recommend Yves Engler's book. He wrote a fantastic book a few years ago called the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. Mm. And that as well details, you know, throughout history, the ugliness of Canadian foreign policy, our involvement in coups, in proxy wars, in illegal interventions all around the world. There is this dominant myth in Canadian culture that Canada is a peacekeeping country. We're a force for peace in the world. Well, if you really look behind that, you will see that actually that's really not the case. And even the statistics don't hold that up. If you were to look, if you were to follow the UN peacekeeping statistics over the past two decades, you would see that Canada isn't even ranked in the top 50 countries that are contributing to peacekeeping in the world. We have one. We are the 14th highest for military spending, but we're not even in the top 50 countries for peacekeeping. So what is our military doing? Well, if you look closely, what we've been involved in is war making and war fighting all around the world. That's what we've been doing. And so Canadians need to take that to heart, and we need to start putting pressure on our public officials saying this is not the role that we want for Canada in the world.
I'd say that most Canadians don't know that Canada has been at war for at least 22 years and possibly longer. No, 22 continuous years of warfare, and Canadians here in Canada don't know that this is happening.
Yes, absolutely. 21 years ago, Canada was involved in the illegal bombing of Serbia, and
that was considered
a war crime. There are Serbian lawyers that are still trying to seek justice for our use of depleted uranium because there's a disproportionate level of cancer in the country. Canada has never atoned for our role in the bombing and the destruction of Serbia, and really the destabilization of the Balkans. So because we haven't ever honestly faced our foreign policy, Canada continues to be involved in these really nefarious, illegal military operations around the world. It went from Serbia, it went to Afghanistan. We were illegally in Iraq and in Libya and in Syria, and it goes on and on and on. And so we really want to recapture the message of Dr. King and say, you know, we want a nonviolent, peaceful foreign policy. It's absolutely time. I mean, we need that. We've got other global challenges where we need to work with everyone in the international community, with China, with Russia, on solving common challenges like the climate crisis. Yeah. We can't be fighting one another. We need to be working collectively in solving our global challenges.
There's a strong tie-in to the climate crisis and military activity, isn't there?
Yeah. There absolutely is. The largest institutional consumer of fossil fuels in the federal government is the Canadian military. And the fighter jets, the light armored vehicles, the warships, they use a lot of fossil fuels. And the Canadian military right now is exempted from fully reporting or reducing their greenhouse gas emissions from any of their military vehicles and their military operations. So, you know, we are allowing this carbon intensive war making and war fighting to take place, and it is absolutely inconsistent with our Paris Agreement targets to rapidly reduce greenhouse gases. So our foreign policy is inconsistent with saving our you know, war fighting foreign policy is inconsistent with our plans to reduce greenhouse gases and to save the climate.
I would say that those plans for climate action that the government has committed to are inconsistent with every action that they've taken. You know, building pipelines, making oil subsidies, provincially reducing the energy tax credits, the green energy tax credits. All those things are completely contraindicated to eliminating the climate crisis.
Yes, and I would just stress too, in the past 3 years since the Trudeau Liberals, or 5 years since the Trudeau Liberals came into to power, mm-hmm. they have dramatically increased military spending. And all of the spending on the military is spending that's not going to green infrastructure, to expanding public mm-hmm. Transportation, to building green, affordable housing that we need.
It's not even going to defense, is it? I mean, it's a Ministry of National Defense. But there is really no defensive action that all these monies are going to.
No, it's very much offensive. So just in this past year, for instance, the Canadian government announced the designs for the new warships that are going to cost a minimum of $60 billion just to manufacture them. Mm-hmm. This was back in February. And then in June, the federal government opened the tenders for a new fleet of fighter jets. We're going to be buying 88 new fighter jets, most likely the Lockheed Martin F-35s, and that's going to be a cost of a minimum $26 billion. And then in August, the federal government announced a $3 billion sole source tender for 260 light armored vehicles from the General Dynamics plant in London, Ontario. And that one defense procurement of $3 billion for tanks is equivalent to the fossil fuel subsidies. What we need to also be talking about, along with like the Green New Deal and no pipelines, is we need to start talking about conversion, about converting our defense industries and our prioritization of armed force to talk about a conversion to civilian industries where mm-hmm. we're building renewable technology, we're building the kind of green infrastructure that we need for this climate challenge that we're facing.
My conservative friends say that Canada is only responsible for some 1.6% of global greenhouse gas emissions. China is responsible for something like 20 or 25% of greenhouse gas emissions. So whatever Canada does is really insignificant in comparison. But the way I understand it, China is actually actively reducing its carbon footprint, whereas Canada's carbon footprint is steadily increasing at an ever-accelerating rate.
Canada historically is also the largest contributor to the problem. So if we look at historic emissions, Canada has disproportionately contributed to the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. We have a very carbon-intensive economy and a very carbon-intensive military. The other thing is, if you look at it in a per capita basis, at a footprint level, Canadians are emitting something like 17 metric tons a year of greenhouse gases, where
each Canadian individually.
So our footprint is very large. When you look at developing countries and countries like China, their footprint is much smaller. And China has been making efforts to increase their renewable energy, and they're considered a world leader in mm-hmm. renewable energy technologies. Canada needs to show leadership on the climate. It needs to show leadership on peace. If Canada wasn't wasting so much money and so much resources on a defense industry, on our war industries, if we were putting that instead into to green industries, Canada would be a leader in the world on green technologies and renewable energy. And that's what we should be doing. We shouldn't be following the United States on their illegal wars around the world.
Yeah. Canada has lost its edge in research and development for green technology. I think at one point it might have been a little bit ahead of the curve before all the other countries caught up and surpassed Canada's ability to both manufacture and develop new technology.
Well, yes, that's absolutely correct. And it's very starkly evident in the United States. The largest exports from the United States are weapons. Even President mm-hmm. Trump said at one point that he recognized that the country that was manufacturing most solar panels on the planet is China.
Yes.
The United States is building guns and fighter jets and warships. That's what the United States is building and selling around the world. Mm. But Canada needs to think critically about our own exports. I mean, Canada right now has a $16 billion contract with Saudi Arabia to build light armored vehicles, you know, tanks. We've sold this year alone hundreds of millions of dollars of these tanks to Saudi Arabia, along with guns and rifles, etc. Mm-hmm. So Canada exports a lot of weapons. We should be leaders in exporting renewable technologies, things people need around the world. The last thing that the countries in the Middle East need are more Canadian and American weapons.
Yeah. Now, the naysayers will make the claim that if Canada doesn't supply those weapons, other countries will, at you know, unethically. Well, I'm not so sure that Canada's export of weapons is any more ethical than anybody else's. How do you counter all these naysayers that say that, you know, Canada is just such a small player in any of this that it's really insignificant?
Well, Canada, like I said, is ranked 14th in the world for military spending. We are
so
in the top.
That's not insignificant.
That isn't insignificant. And Canada is also ranked in the top 25 countries for arms exports. So these statistics are from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, mm-hmm. CIPRI, CIPRI.org. People can find out more information. Canada, over the past few years, has been spending too much money and too much attention on defense industries, on arms exports. And this is what we're worried about. Yeah. And this is what we need to turn around, because the real problems that we're facing are the climate crisis and the poverty crisis. Yeah. And that's going to require a common collective effort around the world for us to work together on solving those problems. More weapons is not going to help. And in fact, the UN Secretary General in May of 2018 announced this new disarmament agenda. Canada ignored it, but many other countries around the world are working very hard on disarmament, and they would like to see Canada step up and show leadership on disarmament.
Specifically, Canada has gotten itself into a situation where it's a lot of its industry is dependent on arms manufacturing. I'm thinking here of General Dynamics, but there's other arms manufacturing industries in Canada as well. And the government will say, you know, this is creating jobs. You know, we're doing a good thing for the economy. We're increasing our exports. We're increasing the number of jobs. How can we tell the people that are working in these industries, the fossil fuel industries, the armament industries, you need to find other work. You need to find other work because what you're doing is bad for the world at large.
Well, they have recognized the need for a just transition, for instance, in the Paris Agreement with workers right now in the extractive industries. So mm-hmm. people who are working right now in the tar sands, in the oil and gas sector, they know that that people cannot continue to work in those industries, and for us to be able to meet our Paris Agreement targets of trying to limit global mean temperature rise to below 2 degrees mm-hmm. Celsius. And so we need something called a just transition. And people have been working very hard in Canada and at the United Nations, for instance, the United Nations Environment Program, working on studies and processes for a just transition. So instead of, for instance, of the federal government spending so much money, so $3 billion at least on fossil fuel subsidies and providing financial support to that industry, they need to instead invest in companies that are doing building right. green technologies and that kind of thing, and helping with the employment opportunities for those workers. So in the same way that the Paris Agreement has envisioned a just transition for the extractive industry, we need a just transition and conversion on the defense side.
Already today, I think the renewable energy industry in Canada has a greater level of employment than the fossil fuel industry. So, you know, it's on its way, but it's an uphill battle. There's far more money pumped into the sustainment of fossil fuels and armaments than there is in the green industry. So I think the problem here is that these large behemoths of industry, military, fossil fuel, are not able to turn around and transition into a clean economy. I think what's going to happen is that they'll end up being eclipsed by up-and-coming industries that are producing green energy, that are producing the equipment needed to produce clean energy.
Yes, and we also need on the ground, a big mass movement of people demanding, you know, a peaceful green economy and this peaceful green transition. So we need a mass movement of Canadians, of Americans saying we do not want our governments to spend so much money on the military anymore. We need that money instead to go to, you know, investment in environment and climate change. So Canadians should know, I mean, last year the public accounts showed that the federal government spent $32 billion on the Department of National Defense, but only $1.8 billion on the Department of Environment and Climate Change. And it's a minuscule amount of money. And we know that under our agreements with NATO, for instance, military spending is going to go up dramatically over the next 10 years. Yeah. And we cannot afford this money to go to armed force and to weapons. We need this money to go to the great transformation that we need to to save the climate and the environment.
Let's talk about getting people on the ground, up in arms and rallying. But before we do that, let's have a quick listen to some more new Canadian content music. I'm going to toss Jake Feeney into the middle of the mix here. A new single that he's just released called No Headlights.
Love has saved in my soul. Keep it in a cup half full. When I pour it down your drain, you'll never overflow, no. And it feels like I'm in driving rain. Oh, with no headlights, only sounds and shade. Those eyes put me in this space. Once again, we fly low. We fly low. There goes my urgency, listening to all. How they said, does it help to breathe? Send me out to give it all up again. But then another view took a planet I knew. So I float on space. And maybe she'll see. Just pass me time and time. Don't even know when will it be safe. She's my loser. This is my loser. There goes your sympathy. Didn't take too long. Quick to drop fears. Come to life in long nights. Prove that I'm on my own. Yes, belief it can be wicked. Maybe she'll see. Just pass me time and time again. And she don't even know when will it be safe. She's my home's ahead. Yeah, she's my home's ahead.
That's Jake Feeney, his new single called No Headlights. Jake and I have been in contact. He emailed office@radiowaterloo.ca and said, hey, I've got some new music. Love it if you could play it on the station. And so I did. And emailed him back and said, you know, it's going to be played today on CKMS Community Connections. And Jake mailed back and said, oh, this is really great. Looking forward to it. So I hope to have Jake coming in from Toronto on the station at some point, maybe to do a live on-air in-studio concert. Love doing those things. Live on air in studio today, I've got Tamara Lawrence, activist and PhD graduate. Are you Dr. Lawrence?
No, I'm still a PhD student, yes. I'm at the Bolsillie School of International Affairs at Wilfrid Laurier University.
And what is your PhD?
So I'm in the conflict and security stream, and I'm looking at the climate impacts of the military.
Which is exactly what we've been talking about.
That's right, yes.
No wonder you're so knowledgeable in the area. You've been devoting how much of your life to this?
Yes, well, I'm a longtime environmentalist and peace activist. I did my MBA and my law degree at Dalhousie University in environmental management and environmental law, and I was expecting to practice environmental law, but I could see that we weren't going to make the kind of progress that we needed to make if we didn't deal with the problem of the military and the military's adverse impact on the environment and on the climate. And I could also see that there wasn't this good, strong link between the environmental movement and the peace movement. I was also I'm also a peace activist with the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace. And so I really wanted to try to link in my activism and in my academic work, link environment and peace, because I think that's really what's going to be needed if we're going to try to deal with the climate emergency and the poverty crisis. We need to take a more holistic approach to the problem.
Yeah. The internet is overflowing and bursting at the seams with pictures of Tamara Lawrence waving banners and participating in rallies. How long have you been doing this?
So, maybe 25 years I've been involved in environmental activism and peace activism. And also, I'm a feminist involved in women and issues for girls. And I just think it's just really important when you have the information and when you have the opportunity to stand up and to speak out and to hit the street when it's required and passing out leaflets, holding up banners and being active. So I'm also a mother. I've got two young boys, and I am very concerned about their future. And yes, I feel like I need to do something. I want to build on the great work of my elders, some great peace activist women and environmental activist women that I knew that mentored me when I was young, and I want to continue on with their work and try to bring about positive environmental and peaceful social change.
And have you had any measurable success, any quantifiable success?
Yes, I have had some little victories. Of course, none of it has been done on my own. It's always in groups and in movements. So one comes to mind quickly, and that is from 2003 to 2005. For 3 years, we worked very, very hard as activists across Canada to keep Canada out of U.S. ballistic missile defense. Mm-hmm. And we were successful in that. And we also worked very hard to keep Canada out of overtly out of the war in Iraq. Canada was involved kind of in the back door, but those are victories. We also caused the federal government to stall in its purchase of the fighter jets, and that's something that I'm going to work on more this year, is trying to prevent Canada buying a fleet of new fighter jets, because that's the last thing that we need as a country and last thing that the climate needs.
I needed to hear that. It's exhausting going out there. I mean, it's fun going out there waving banners and, you know, shouting slogans at rallies, but it's exhausting too. And, you know, it's always at the back of my mind if it isn't at the top of my mind. So, you know, it's mentally exhausting as well. So I'm very glad that you can tell me that this is being useful and it's had a good effect.
Yes, and well, I'll give you one other quick example. Last year was the 70th anniversary of NATO, and I'm really trying to build a resistance and an opposition to NATO in this country. So last year, I protested once a month outside the NATO Association of Canada's office in downtown Toronto. And I was expecting to protest all by myself. I said I was going to make this commitment. I was going to go once a month to Toronto and protest against NATO, pass out leaflets and stand with my banners. And every single month, new and and different people came to protest with me, and we had a mass of people every month, and it also led to people having anti-NATO protests across the country. So you have to, everybody can do something. You can start doing something. I mean, we know this great example of Greta Thunberg sitting outside the Swedish parliament, striking for the climate, mm-hmm. skipping school and standing up for action on climate change. And, you know, she started this amazing movement, and we all can do something in our small and big ways. And I just think it's just really important to be vocal and visible and public about where we stand on the issues. And I want to be fearless in the short time that I have on this planet. I want to try to do what I can. And if it's standing on a corner with a sign, and, you know, I'm willing to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing was, we're very lucky in Canada where we can protest, we can have demonstrations, and we're not faced with, most of us anyways, aren't, you know, faced with being killed or detained, where, you know, I mean, we know from the human rights defenders and environmental activists around the world. In Honduras, Berta Cáceres, you know, was killed for trying to protect her community from a dam. Hundreds and hundreds of human rights defenders have been killed in Colombia. And so I think, at the very least in Canada, with the safety and security that I have in this country, I have got to stand up for the right things, and I have to be in solidarity with people who don't have mm-hmm. it as easy. And so I want to just be very clear that I'm standing up for peace, for the environment, for social justice, for human rights, and I want a better world for everyone.
We get a chance to do that again this coming weekend.
That's right. This Saturday in Waterloo at the public square at 2:00, we're going to have a rally, Peace with Iran. This is part of the Global Day of Protest. It's a solidarity event. This Global Day of Protest was called by hundreds of peace and justice organizations in the United States for this coming Saturday. So there are actions that are going to take place across the United States, across Canada, and in many, 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 many countries around the world. So people are standing up saying, we do not want war with Iran. Mm-hmm. We want peace with Iran. We want these illegal U.S. sanctions that are harming the people in Iran to stop. We also are calling for U.S., NATO, and Canadian troops out of Iraq and out of the Middle East. Our foreign forces are not contributing to peace, stability, and security in the region. They are contributing to chaos and violence. So we want our troops out. That's the other demand that we have on Saturday. And the other thing that we want is we want to show that we care about the people of the Middle East. We care about the people in Iraq. We care about the people in Iran. And we want international friendship and solidarity. So we are partnering with some organizations here in the community, with KW Peace and with Waterloo Region Nonviolence and the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace and Ellis Perg, and we're having a one-hour rally, like I said, this Saturday, January 25th from 2 to 3 at the public square. And we encourage people to come. There'll be some speeches. We're hoping that the local Persian choir will do a song, and we'll stand with our flags. I would like to mention, too, that we did have a demonstration on January 4th, mm-hmm. and people from the Iranian-Canadian community came to that rally. And when they came to the rally and they saw that there were Canadians standing for peace with Iran, they told us that they had tears in their eyes, and they were really overwhelmed with emotion, and they were very heartened that Canadians cared. So I'm really encouraging people to join us. Join us at the public square and be part of this global day of mm-hmm. action for peace and be part of this international right. effort. I think it's going to be really great.
What an international body is organizing this?
So people, if they want to find out more information, they can go to Code Pink website. This is a women's peace organization in the United States. It's just codepink.org, and they can find out more. But it's being organized as well by many, many organizations, mostly in the United States, but also around the world. The peace organizations in the United States know that they are concerned and responsible about the decisions of the White House in the Middle East, and they do not want a war with Iran, and so they want people around the world to support their efforts and to work together to say, you know, we want a different relationship with Iran in the Middle East. If we want changes in Iran, it's going to require us to have direct diplomacy and peaceful dialogue with the country.
So again, this means getting the politicians to take those actions, which means that you and I, citizens, have to contact our MPs, possibly even our MPPs, to let them know this is what Canadians want.
Yes, we are also planning an action. We're going to have a large sign that we're all going to sign, and we're going to send it to our local member of parliament, Bardish Chagger, and let her know that the people of Waterloo want peace with Iran. We want the sanctions to end, and we want our Canadian troops out. So we always are going to link the action that we do in the street with a political action.
Good.
As well. That's really very important.
Yeah. The follow-up has to happen. I mean, the rallying by itself is invigorating, but itself doesn't accomplish the things that need to be done. That has to be political action.
Absolutely. Yeah. And people can pick up the phone and actually phone the Prime Minister and leave a message on not just the issue with Iran, but all other issues. And people can contact, send an email to our Minister of Foreign Affairs, François-Philippe Champagne, and let him know that that you want the sanctions with Iran to end, you want Canadian troops out, and we want to have a diplomatic relationship with the country. That's the best route for greater human rights and freedom in the country. We need to have that. The rally, I should also mention, is also going to be an opportunity for us to mourn the death of all of the victims.
Yes.
On flight 752, that Ukrainian flight that was shot down by the Islamic Republic army during the escalation. And, this is a tragic consequence from what the United States initiated with Iran by killing, assassinating the Iranian general and the Iraqi military leader. I mean, this led to this tragic downing of the civilian aircraft in Tehran. And so this is just another reason why military intervention and force and violent escalation just doesn't work.
No.
We need nonviolent diplomacy.
No.
That is Dr. King's message that, 50 years ago, that the message is still the right message. It's the timely message today, and our government needs to hear it, but it needs to hear it from the people. So we really need to pick up the phone, to send an email to our politicians to say we want a peaceful foreign policy.
You can put all that contact information, doxing the Prime Minister, putting his email address and phone number right on our website. We'll put that on radiowaterloo.ca/CCC with all the show notes, all the links and organizations that you've mentioned, and the upcoming events that you've got.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You have a long list of upcoming events. I'm subscribed to the KW Peace mailing list, and just in the last week or so got a list of, 24 different events taking place here in Waterloo Region and as far as Toronto. Do you have that list with you?
Not
with you. Okay. Sorry to put you on the spot there.
I don't have it right with me, but I do like to try to put together a monthly list of events that are related to peace, social justice, and the environment, and to send it out so that people know what's going on in the community and that they can get involved, and then they can take action like we need. The more informed we are, the better, and then we need to put it into action.
I'm happy to say that there are many organizations, social justice organizations, peace, nonviolence, environmental organizations, all manner of organizations, coming together under the umbrella of KW Peace. And I used to read KW Peace events on the show here. Sadly, I've been a bit negligent in that. So under your careful guidance, I'll resume that activity.
Well, Bob, you do a great job keeping the calendar going on the KW Peace website, so people can also check the website to find out what's going on. And there's just so many ways to get involved, and we can make a better community here in the Waterloo region, and that can have ripple effects internationally.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to play another piece of music. This is Wilfred N. and the Grown Men. Wilfred N. was apparently in the studio and fell asleep, and then he woke up, and then he fell asleep again, and wrote a song about that. So we'll listen to that now, and then when you come back, if you can sum up all the just a list of the events taking place in the next few days, few weeks, few months, and then put that all on the website as well. This is Wilfred N. and the Grown Men. Wilfred N. and the Grown Men. Not sure if he ended up awake or asleep at the end of that, but it's a good tune. We'll play that again sometime. Tomorrow, Lawrence is in the studio with a list of activities that are taking place. Peace, nonviolence, environmental justice events. Everything's all tied together. It's all intersectional. What is the big thing coming up tomorrow?
Well, I'm very excited to say that in May, in Ottawa, there is going to be a major peace conference. We haven't seen a peace conference of this size and magnitude for a long time. So it's going to be taking place at the same time as our big protest against CANSEC. And CANSEC is the arms show in Ottawa. It's in fact the largest weapons show in North America, and it takes place from May 27th to May 28th. So peace organizations are planning right now a major shutdown CANSEC on those dates, and then that protest against CANSEC will be followed by this peace conference on the 29th and 30th. And it's being organized by many groups. The head organization is called World Beyond War, and groups like the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace and No War Peace in Ottawa and the Quakers. Many groups are planning this, and we're expecting hundreds and hundreds of people and some really high-profile peace activists, people like Kathy Kelly and Medea Benjamin and Bruce Gagnon. It's going to be really fantastic. So I encourage people to plan a trip up to our capital at the end of May, help us shut down CANSEC, and then join us in a really exciting and informative peace conference. So that's what we're looking forward to in the next few months.
A bit of disruption, possibly a bit of civil disobedience.
Yes, absolutely. I was in Ottawa last year in May to protest CANSEC, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people that were shutting down the gate, and there weren't arrests last year, but there have been in the past. Hundreds of people have been arrested. It's not so much about getting arrested. It's about standing for peace, saying this is not the kind of show and industry what we want to support. We don't want Canada to be promoting weapons and war around the world, and that's what happens at CANSEC. So we want to shut it down, and we're going to have a great peace conference, and we encourage Canadians coast to coast to come.
And we're saying that this is important enough, we're willing to get arrested over our principles.
That's right. Some people will, some people won't, and you don't need to, but come and join us, stand for peace, and then come and be really motivated in this fantastic peace conference. So we're looking forward to that. We know that people from the KW area are going to be coming up, and we'd love to have more join us. And you can find out more information at World Beyond War website.
Okay. Is there cooperative transportation being arranged, carpooling, possibly something bigger than that?
Yes, there is carpooling being planned, and there's also billeting in Ottawa being planned as well, and there's information on the website.
It is unlikely our roving journalist for CKMS is going to be in attendance at Ottawa, so I need to have you back when it's all over so you can make a thorough report and debrief us all on what happened.
Yes, I would be happy to. Yes.
It's a date.
Yes, that would be great.
All right. Yeah. Other things. This weekend, 25th?
So, yes. So this Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Waterloo Public Square, we're going to have our Global Day of Protest, a rally for peace with Iran, and we're going to mourn the victims of Flight 752. That will be an hour-long rally, and it will be in solidarity with actions that are taking place around the world. And you can find out more information at the KW Peace calendar online. And then just another reminder that tonight at 7 o'clock at the Balsillie School of International Affairs at 67 Herb Street, we're going to be doing a screening of a film in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose day it is today. And we're going to be screening the film about his most important but least known speech called Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break the Silence. So please come out tonight and honor Dr. King with us.
Hope to see you there.
That would be great.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tamara Lawrence, for coming in, talking to us about peace, war, environmental issues, rallies, industry, government, politics, and all the things that are so important. Thank you.
Oh, thanks very much, Bob.
You've been listening to CKMS Community Connections on Radio Waterloo, CKMS FM 102.7. CKMS Community Connections is produced by Radio Waterloo and sponsored by Radio Waterloo. Our executive producer is Jennifer Strong. Associate producers are Jordan Dorans, Jeff Stager, Dylan Bravener, and my name is Bob Jonkman. Happy Monday, everybody. See you tonight at the film showing.